Commentary Track presents Radio Movies, classic radio shows based on classic films, with your host, Frank Thompson.
Good evening and welcome to episode 22 of Radio Movies. Got a really lighthearted tale for you tonight. It's Walter Van Tilburg Clark's The Oxbow Incident. This begins an undetermined series, I think it'll last throughout this month, on the radio shows based on the films of director William A. Wellman. As I've mentioned, at least on the commentary track, I don't know if I've mentioned it on Radio Movies, my friend John Gallagher and I have been working on what we think and hope is the definitive book on Wellman. It's already huge. 300,000 words, give or take, so far. And it's still a-going, but we fully intend to have it published in 2015. And because we've been working so hard, making those slow, trudging steps toward publication, it's just been on my mind. And so I thought, there are several good radio shows based on Wellman's film, so why don't we do some? This is a September 18th, 1944 production of the Screen Guild Theater, and it has a couple of stars from the film and a couple who aren't in the film. Harry Davenport and William Eyth both play the same parts that they did in the movie. Edward Arnold plays the part originally played by Frank Conroy of the cruel martinet former soldier who takes seeming pleasure in the situation. And we'll get to that in a minute. And then Jesse Brooks, who was a terrific African-American actor. We get to hear him instead of Lee Whipper, who played that part in the film. The film, of course, as I hope you know, starred Henry Fonda, Dana Andrews, Anthony Quinn, John Ford's brother, Francis Ford, who had been a formidable director and longtime actor, and at this point was just playing character parts. Jane Darwell as a woman who is delighted to be a part of a lynching. Mark Lawrence, Victor Killian, Crispin Martin, Paul Hurst, one of the great sleazy bad guys of all time. It was based on Walter Van Tilburg Clark's novel, which was about a lynching in the Old West. Wellman told the story this way, and I really am not sure that I believe this, because I can't come up with much to back up this story, but I like it because it's so stupid. The rights to the book were originally bought by a Paramount producer named Harold Hurley. According to Wellman, and according to others, I think maybe who just heard Wellman talk about it, his intention was to make it as a Technicolor film starring Mae West. And when Wellman read the book in galleys, he wanted to buy the rights and then found that Hurley was already the owner. And so he tried to work with him for a while. And that really didn't work out. Eventually, Wellman bought the property himself with his own money, not with studio money, and then took it around to virtually every studio in town. He did go to Paramount, MGM, Warner's. Finally went to his frenemy, Daryl Zanuck, at Fox. And Zanuck also thought the project was an important one, and he told Wellman that he didn't think it was going to make a penny, but he thought it would be a prestige picture. But knowing he had Wellman over a barrel, as it were, he made a deal. He said, I'll let you make The Oxbow Incident if you'll make two more movies for me, sight unseen, and without making any kind of changes to the script, just take the script and make the film. So those films were Thunderbirds and Buffalo Bill, starring Joel McRae and Maureen O'Hara. Neither one of those is a bad picture, not by any means. They're both Technicolor. They're a lot of fun. And so it doesn't seem like that big a punishment, but maybe Wellman saw it that way. And, of course, Wellman always made fun of the end of Buffalo Bill for the rest of his life, where the little cripple kid stands up at Buffalo Bill's retirement speech and says, "God bless you too, Buffalo Bill." Wellman went to his ex-writing partner, Robert Carson, who he had worked with on Beaugest and The Light That Failed and others, Stars Born. Carson read the book, didn't like it a bit, and turned it down, and they never worked together again. He then turned to Lamar Trotti. He was an Atlanta-born producer, screenwriter. He'd worked a lot with John Ford on Judge Priest, Steamboat Round the Bend, Young Mr. Lincoln, Drums Along the Mohawk, and produced and or wrote many, many great Fox films. So he took Clark's book and adapted it. So the studio got rolling on it on May 18th, 1942. The studio announced that Preston Foster would have a major role in the film. We don't know exactly what part he was supposed to play because it didn't last very long. We assume that it was the part that Dana Andrews eventually played. For the role of Ma Greer, the black-hearted mother figure of the film, Wellman turned to Sarah Allgood, who he had fairly recently worked with in Roxy Hart and had a good relationship with her. But she didn't last long and was replaced by Florence Bates. And then Bates was injured in a fall from a horse, and she was in turn replaced by Jane Darwell. Now, a lot of people have complained about this element of the film, which is that the great majority of it was shot on a soundstage. Wellman and company did go on location to Lone Pine and up to Iverson Ranch in Chatsworth, California. But by and large, the movie was made on Stage 9 on the Fox lot in Westwood. It was tough going for materials because, being wartime, there were all sorts of defense regulations that limited the kind of construction materials they could use. As a matter of fact, construction materials could not cost more than $5,000 per film. The film got great reviews, but it was not widely released. Zanuck didn't really believe in its commercial potential, and nobody else at Fox did either. So they didn't really want to throw good money after bad, and they just put it out to whatever extent they could. Didn't do much, but gradually it began to gain a reputation, and that happened mostly, as so often happens with these things, it happened in France, where they saw the film and saw that it was pretty uncompromising and was dealing with the kind of themes that really weren't being dealt with in wartime films of those days, because most people wanted to keep films happy for the wartime audience. And the Oxbow incident is just thoroughly depressing. It's there's nothing happy about it. Now, the interesting thing is, to me, that Wellman made another film that year called Lady of Burlesque with Barbara Stanwyck. It was based on a mystery novel by Gypsy Rose Lee, and it's about murders in a burlesque house. It's a mystery, but it's mostly a comedy, and it's got musical numbers, and Barbara Stanwyck does as risque a dance as she could get away with in 1943, as well as all the other burlesque girls with, of course, their navels well covered up. This rather lighthearted film was released within a week of the Oxbow incident. So I've always thought if that didn't show Wellman's range, then nothing did, because these two films could not be less alike in so many ways. Less alike except in the fact that they are both ensemble movies. There's not really a star of the film. We tend to think of Henry Fonda as the star of the film because he was the biggest star there. Dana Andrews was not particularly a star when they were making the film, but by the time the film was released in 1943, his profile had risen quite a bit. A lot of people saw the film and wondered why such a big star had taken such a tiny role. Now, I just said that Henry Fonda is really the de facto star of the film, and that's what makes this particularly fascinating as a radio drama. Because the part that Henry Fonda and Harry Morgan, as the two drifters who get caught up in this lynch mob, aren't even in the radio show at all. Harry Davenport, who's playing the same role as he did in the film, becomes the central character in this, and he narrates it, and he is the one to whom the prisoners speak, and he's the one who gets the letter, and more about that in a second, but he is really the main character. And so I don't know if this is unique, but I tell you, I've never heard another radio show based on a movie that essentially took the two main characters out of the movie and then made the radio show without them. I haven't heard every radio show ever made, so it's possible that it happened in other times. But that's a real striking element of this. Now, this is Screen Guild Theater, which is a half hour, so I guess they felt like they wanted to streamline it as much as they could. And even so, I think they do a really good job of getting at all the major points of the novel and of the film. And in fact, there are a couple of things in the film that I've always felt were dead-end scenes that brought in characters for no apparent reason, and it's kind of nice to have those gone. The matter of the letter has always been a little controversial in this film. In the novel, one of the men who are about to be lynched asked for time to write his wife a letter. Wellman, for whatever reason, and maybe this was Lamar Trotti's idea, who knows, but they created a letter, and Henry Fonda read it in the bar room at the end of the film. Now, it's a beautifully shot scene, and I think it's one of my favorite Wellman scenes from that angle, because one of Wellman's visual traits was he loved to have things obscure part of the image. If you'll think in Nothing Sacred, where Frederick March and Carol Lombard do an entire scene standing behind a big limb of a tree so that you can only see them from about the waist down for this entire thing. And he did that kind of thing a lot. And this is one of the scenes where it seems most organic, and it really works to make the scene as effective as it is. Fonda is reading the letter. Beside him, Harry Morgan has tilted his head down so that the brim of his hat obscures everything about Fonda's face except his lips. It really does make you concentrate on what Fonda is saying. Now, the bad news is that the letter just never has seemed right to me for being the kind of thing. I mean, it's a little too philosophical for a guy who has minutes to live. So I'm not really on board with the reading of the letter, except that it just was shot so beautifully and directed by Wellman in such a striking way. When John Ford saw the Oxbow incident, he wrote to Wellman, and the letter says, put the brim of somebody's hat over my face while I read this letter. Just had the extreme pleasure of seeing the Oxbow incident, and I was certainly thrilled. It is the best picture I have seen for longer than I like to remember. Billy, it was really swell, and it did my heart good after reading all the publicity about these new genius boys like Preston Sturges and the like, to think that an old-timer should come along and put out the best direction of these recent years. The only thing in the picture that didn't strike me as being real, Billy, was my brother Frank refusing the drink and making such a fuss about getting hung. After all, most of his ancestors have been hung, and I just can't see Frank refusing a drink. It's now become thought of as a classic. It's not seen as often as I would like for it to be, but it really is a very, very good film. As I said earlier, a lot of people complain about the soundstage quality of it, even though there were some location scenes. Most of it is shot on the stage, and I really do think, and have always thought, that works for this film in this particular case, because the studio shooting and the slight artificiality of the sets and the claustrophobia, I think it all works to really hammer home what is going on with all these people and how bleak and depressing and hopeless it all is. And so I don't mind it a bit. It seems a little bit stylized, and I think it really works. If they'd had the whole thing in the wide open spaces, I'm not quite sure that it would have come off quite as well. At any rate, it's a good radio adaptation, and I hope that you will like it. Enjoy The Oxbow Incident.
Judy Astor presents The Screen Guild Players. The Lady Astor Screen Guild play tonight, The Oxbow Incident. The starring players.
This is Edward Arnold.
This is Harry Davenport.
This is William Ike.
And this is Jess Lee Brooks.
Tonight, Lady Astor presents the Screen Guild Players in the 20th Century Fox picture, The Oxbow Incident, based on the novel by Walter Van Tilburg Clark. A realistic and absorbing study of what goes on in the minds of men when they form themselves into a mob. It stars Harry Davenport as Davies, Edward Arnold as Major Tetley, William Ithe as his son Gerald, and Jess Lee Brooks as the Reverend Sparks. The Lady Esther, Screen Guild Players, and the Oxbow Incident.
I don't suppose many people remember it now. It was back in 1885, you see. A small thing, not much. You might say, just an incident. The town looked almost deserted that day. A few wooden shacks, a blazing sun, one dusty street, and nothing moving except an old tired mongrel dog. Until that cowhand came pounding down the road, pulled up his horse in front of Darby's saloon and yelled,
"Hey, men! Where's everybody? Where are you, men?"
The boys came filing out of the bar. And pretty soon, by the way they sounded, I could tell that something was wrong. So I left my place. I ran the general store, you see, and went right over to find out. Darby was the one who told me, standing behind the bar, polishing glass.
Someone got Larry Kincaid last night. They found him laying in a dry wash this morning.
Dead?
Shot right through the head.
But who? Kincaid didn't have any enemies. Who'd do a thing like that?
There's been a lot of cattle stolen this year.
You mean rustlers?
Maybe. Jeff Farnley's taken it pretty hard. Him and Kincaid were buddies.
Yes, I know.
Then the other boys are kind of hot, too. They find them rustlers, they might do something about it.
A lynching?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'd seen things like that happen before. One minute just a crowd of men, the next minute a mob. You know, it's a funny thing about mobs. No one wants to be first, no one wants to be last. But just let someone start it off, and the madness spreads like a prairie fire. I knew they wouldn't listen to me, so I sent a lad running to Judge Tyler. Pretty soon he was there, up on the steps facing the crowd.
Believe me, men, I know how it is. My old friend Larry Kincaid, one of the finest and noblest gentlemen that ever...
That's the stumping, Judge. We've got a job to do. All we want is your blessing.
Now, Farley, of course you can't flinch from what you believe to be your duty, but this is something that should be left to the law.
By the time the law gets ready to act, them rustlers will be over the rail.
That's right.
One more word out of you, Monty Smith, and I'll have you up for impeding justice.
Judge, you can't impede what don't hardly move.
That's right.
And you, Jenny Greer, a woman, to lend yourself to a thing like this.
Ha, ha, ha.
That's power, Ma.
Listen, listen, men. The sheriff's down at Kincaid's right now. Judge, is that true?
It sure is, Davies. He went down this morning.
You see, men, everything's being attended to legally. You'd just have a long, hard ride for nothing. Now wait. It'll be dark soon, mighty cold. My advice, to come inside. Have a drink and wait till we hear from the sheriff. What do you say?
Drinks are on the house, men. One round on me.
I'll up that, Dolly. I'll make it two.
And I'll make it three. For everyone but Jenny Greer.
We had them laughing. I was sure we'd won. Only just then we heard another voice. Level, hard, and cold as ice.
What's the matter, men? Disbanding?
Looks that way, Major Tetley. Brother Davies here just about convinced us.
Of what, Mr. Davies?
Why, it's useless to follow those men, Major. They could be over the rail by now.
Yeah, but they aren't. As it happens, they went east by Bridges Pass.
To the mountains?
That's right, Fonley. By way of the Oxbow.
But that's 8,000 feet up. They'd be crazy to go that way.
Not so crazy, Mr. Davies, knowing how crazy it would look to us.
How come you're so sure, Major?
One of my riders saw him. He hid in the woods and let him pass. He thought it strange they should be driving cattle up there.
Cattle? Any marks?
Yes, finally. They carried the B-bar-8.
That's Kincaid's mark. A dirty rats. How many were there?
Three of them. Strangers. My rider says he'd never seen them before.
But, Major, why were you so long in bringing us this word?
My son was out on the range. I knew he'd want to go along. Gerald, is that correct?
I'm here, Father. Isn't that all that counts?
It counts for me.
Farley, you stay off that horse. I'm not asking you, Farley. I'm telling you.
Telling me what, Judge?
Oh, now, look, Jeff, you don't have to worry. This business will be taken care of.
Yeah, and I know who's going to take care of it. Me.
Oh, now, Jeff.
Whoever shot Larry Kincaid ain't coming in here for you to fuddle with your lawyer's tricks for 6 months. Kincaid didn't have 6 months to decide if he wanted to die. You ready, Tetley?
Major Tetley, you mustn't let this be a lynching.
It's scarcely what I choose, Davies.
Promise me you'll bring them in for a fair trial.
I promise I'll abide by the majority will of the posse.
Now, look here, Tetley. You know what's legal. You can't have a posse without a sheriff.
What about me?
Yeah, what about you, Mapes?
I'm a deputy. Sheriff swore me in before he left this morning.
Well, in that case, Mr. Mapes, suppose you deputize the rest of us.
You can't. It's illegal. No deputy can deputize.
What do you think, Major? Well, that's good enough for me.
Me too, Butch. Go ahead and pray.
Butch Mapes, you're violating the law.
Raise your right hand. I hereby solemnly swear I'm sworn in as a deputy in the case of the murder of Larry Kincaid, and I'm willing to abide by the decision of the majority, so help me God. Say I do.
I do.
All right, men, check your guns and horses. We leave here in exactly 10 minutes.
Right. Next bye, buddy! Yippee! Well, ain't every day we get a hanging in a town as dead as this one. Hey, you coming, Sparks?
No, sir, Mr. Smith. I don't guess so.
Well, why not? We ought to have a reverend along. There's going to be some praying to do.
Lay off him, Smith.
Excuse me, Mr. Davies. Maybe he's right.
He's joking as far.
I know, sir. But maybe someone ought to go that feels the way I do.
Well, sure. Davies can lend you his Bible so as you keep the burial fit and proper.
Thank you, sir. But I knows my text without the book.
You can take a horse from my shed, Sparks. Come along. We'll get him out.
Thank you, sir.
Sparks.
Yes, sir.
Can that kid of yours ride?
Sure can, Mr. Davies, just like an Indian.
Then he's the only one who can go.
Why, sir? Why, too?
Down to Kincaid to get the sheriff. Gerald, wouldn't your father want you to be riding up with him?
Sure. I suppose so. Major Tetley and son riding out at the head of the pack.
You don't like this thing, do you?
How can you like it? Going out to hunt men like coyotes or rabbits. We're very brave, aren't we? 28 of us sticking together trying to tell ourselves we're noble and right. Not one of us willing to cut and run because we're afraid somebody might think we're yellow.
You don't feel that way, did you, when you... Why did you come?
Because I'm weak. My father's strong. That's hell. You understand how that's hell?
You didn't start this. It isn't your fault, son.
If we get those men and hang them, I'll kill myself. I won't go on living, remembering I saw it and was a part of it myself.
You could still go home.
No, I can't. Even if I could, it wouldn't matter. I don't count.
Gerald!
I'm coming, Father.
Say, Davies, I just heard that Tetley kid sounding off. What's feeding on him anyway?
Lots of things, I guess. You know, he's not much like his father, Darby. He's sore. Besides, he's been sick a lot. Likes to stay by himself and read.
He don't sound right bright in the head to me.
Maybe not. But how would you feel if you knew your own father hated you?
Mr. Davies.
That you, Spock?
Mind if I sit with you a bit while we stop?
Not at all. I was feeling rather lonesome myself.
More cold, ain't it, sir?
Yes. It'll be worse later.
Yes, sir. Mr. Davies, I sure wish we was out of this business.
If
so do the others, but they're afraid to admit it.
It's on himself, the Lord's vengeance.
Do you think the Lord knows what's happening up here tonight?
Yes, sir. He marks the sparrow's fall. I saw my own brother lynched, Mr. Davies. I was just a little fellow then.
Had he done what they picked him up for?
We didn't any of us ever know.
They lynched him without being sure?
Oh, they made him confess. But it wouldn't have done no good if he didn't. Confessing just made it shorter, that's all.
Yes. It happens that way sometimes.
But time to move on, men. Come on, let's go.
That must be them up ahead. You can see their campfire.
Would they be showing a fire if they were on the run?
Well, they would if they thought they weren't being followed, Davies. Now, men, let's not have any shooting or rough work until they've got a chance to tell it their way.
The one that got Kincaid is mine. Don't forget that, Major.
I won't, Farley. He's yours when you're sure. Gerald, you come up with me. Mates, you take six men and work around from the back.
Fine, Major.
We're closing simultaneously. Mr. Davies, would you like a gun?
No, thanks.
Mr. Sparks.
No, sir, Major. Thank you, just
as he. As you choose. All right, boys, let's go. And good luck.
There were three of them, camping right along the Oxbow. A young fellow, an old man, and a Mexican. They were sound asleep when we rode in on them, but it didn't take long to wake them up.
What is it? What's the matter?
Don't move, young man. And put your hands up.
The rest of you, too. You, Mex.
No, Sabby.
That's all right, brother. You will.
Yell! Collect their guns.
What are you trying to do? What do you want from us?
We don't want nothing. This ain't no stick-up, mister. This is a posse.
But we haven't done anything.
That remains to be seen. Gerald!
What?
You fool, don't get between him and my gun.
What's all the mystery? Why don't you tell us what we're being held for?
I'd rather you told us.
Told you what? What are you talking about?
Rustling. Ever hear of it?
Rustling?
And murder.
Murder?
Ain't we had enough palaver? Let's get it done and go home.
That'll do, finally.
Who says so? Who picked you to be boss anyway? We got him. I say let's swing him before we all freeze to death.
All right, there's a fire over there. If you're cold, go warm yourself. All right, men. Bring the prisoners over by the fire. I'll question them there.
Mr. Davies.
Yes, boss?
You think the sheriff's going to get here in time?
That's what I've been worrying about. Suppose he doesn't get here at all.
Lady Esther has presented Act One of the Oxbow Incident, starring William Ives, Jess Lee Brooks, Harry Davenport, and Edward Arnold. In just a moment, we will hear the Lady Esther Screen Guild players in Act Two. But first, a word from our hostess, Lady Esther.
Have you ever seen a woman change completely? Change from a drab little mouse to someone radiant? Well, I saw such a change only recently. I met a rather timid, plain little woman at a party. Her skin was so poor and so unattractive that she all but hid in a corner rather than face people. She knew who I was, and several times I caught her glance. About a month later, I happened to run into her again. Well, this time I stared, and I could hardly believe my eyes. My shy little acquaintance had become a charming, attractive woman. I wish you could have seen her skin. It looked simply radiant, so smooth and fresh that she actually looked years younger. And her whole personality reflected the change, even the way she walked and held her head. When I saw you at that party, she told me happily, I suddenly remembered all the things I'd heard you say on the radio about Lady Esther Face Cream. And Lady Esther Face Cream is all I've used since, every morning and every night. Why don't you try Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream? It's all you need for complete beauty care, because it does not one thing, but all four your skin needs most to be its loveliest. It cleans thoroughly, it softens your skin, it helps nature refine the pores, and it leaves a wonderful, smooth surface for powder to cling to. Women all over the world have written me that Lady Esther Face Cream does more to beautify their skin than any cream they've ever used, even at five times the price.
Major Tetley who questioned the prisoner. Very formal, very quiet. Too formal, too quiet. There was something unhealthy about it. Something horrible. Deep down inside, he was enjoying himself. He took the young fellow first, the one who seemed to be the boss.
What's your name, young man?
Donald Martin.
Where are you from?
Pike's Hole.
That's a lie.
Mr. Smith?
I get around Pike's Hole a lot. I've never seen this fellow before.
I just moved in 3 days ago. Dave Baker's place. I bought it in Los Angeles last month. I gave him $4,000, sight unseen.
Then, brother, you've been robbed.
But my family's there right now, my wife and kids. Why don't you take me back and let me prove it? I'm entitled to a trial.
You're getting a trial. But 28 of the only kind of judges, murderers, and rustlers get in this country. You have any cattle up there with you? I won't ask you again.
Yeah. I got 50 head.
Where'd you get them?
Mr. Kincaid?
That's what we figured, son.
I didn't steal them. Honest. I bought and paid cash for them.
You got a bill of sale?
Mr. Kincaid was out on the range. He said he'd mail the bill of sale to me.
Conley.
Yeah?
How long have you known Larry Kincaid?
Ever since we were kids.
You ever know him to sell any cattle without a bill of sale?
Never.
But he did. He'd tell you himself. Why don't you ask him?
Quit bluffing. You know that Larry Kincaid can't tell us anything.
Why not?
Because he's dead.
That wasn't enough for Tetley. He had to have his fun with the other two, the old man and the Mexican. But the old man just kept blubbering.
I didn't do nothing. I don't want to die. I don't want to die in the dark.
And the Mexican kept on insisting stubbornly.
No sabi, senor. Me no sabi.
And still young Martin stuck by his gun. Refused to change his story one bit.
I tell you, Kincaid was alive yesterday afternoon. He sold me those cattle to stock my place. Don't you believe me? Why do you have to blame it on me? Who gave you the right? Who sent you up here?
The sheriff.
That's not true, Major Tetley. The sheriff didn't even know we were coming.
No, but I did.
And that's right, Mates. Mr. Davies, perhaps I should have said the deputy sheriff. That makes it quite legal, I believe.
Now, listen. Listen, men. I'm not trying to obstruct justice, but this lad is only asking what he's entitled to, a fair trial. Martin, you say you're innocent, and I, for one, believe you.
That makes you the only one, Davies.
All right, men, time up.
You don't mean you're gonna... You can't. I got some kids. One of them's just a baby. Just give me some time. That's all I want, a little time.
You've had too much already.
I gotta write a letter. If you're human, you'll give me time for that.
Major Tetley, that's not so much to ask.
I believe you may have a point, Mr. Davies. Mates, what time is it?
3:05.
Gentlemen, just a moment. We don't want to give anyone cause for complaint. With your permission, we will wait until daylight. That'll give Reverend Sparks the time to settle his business at leisure.
He gave the letter to me, Major Tetley. Asked me to take it to his wife. If he'd only read it. It's such a fine letter.
Sure, I'm not disputing that, Mr. Davies. But if it's an honest letter, it's none of my business to read it. And if it isn't, I have no interest in it.
Won't any of you read it? Any of you? Why not? Is it because you don't want to know the truth? It's a beautiful letter. If you just read it, you'll know he's not the kind of man who could steal or kill.
That kind of an argument don't stand up against branded cattle and no bill of sale.
I was just hoping.
Gentlemen, it's daylight.
Major Tetley, I warn you, if we hang these men and they're innocent, we're due to be hanged ourselves.
Well, then I suggest we act as a unit so there can be no question of mistaken reprisals. Mr. Davies, are you willing to abide by a majority decision? How about the rest of you?
Sure.
Very well. All who agree with Mr. Davies for putting this off and turning it over to the court, step over here. Mr. Davies, one. And me, sir. Schwartz, that's two.
Well, me too, I guess.
Mr. Darby?
Count me. I'm with Mr. Davies.
Gerald! Anyone else? Four of you. Four, Mr. Davies. Hardly a majority.
Come on, what are we waiting for?
Finally, we'll do this in an orderly manner. Now you tie their hands behind them. Put them up on their horses. The second limb on that oak will hold them all. Smith, you get up there and tie the ropes.
Oh, well, Major.
Finally, we'll whip one horse out.
You better will.
Mapes will whip the second.
Right, Major.
And Gerald, you'll whip the third.
I could see it now. The terrible, quiet cruelty of the man, forcing his son, a boy like Gerald, to be an executioner. But it was fate, I thought, that Gerald should fail in this once again. At the very last moment, the boy turned away, sobbing and choking, until Tetley stepped forward, struck him down with his gun, and whipped the third horse out himself. Then, as those three figures kicked convulsively in the air, he turned to Farnley, very quietly.
Finish him, Farnley.
Done with. Now we can get back.
Hey, you there. What's going on?
Hey, it's the sheriff.
What's up?
Huh?
What's all the shooting for?
There they are, Sheriff. We got them all right.
Got who, mates? What are you talking about?
Kincaid's murders. Got all three of them.
Yeah, hung them, too.
You must be loco. Larry Kincaid ain't dead.
What?
Not dead.
But we thought...
I just left Kincaid with the doctor. I got the fellas that shot him, too.
But, Sheriff, these fellas, they're Larry's cattle... No bill of sale.
Give me your badge, mate.
Oh, sure, sure.
Mr. Davies, I know you well enough to know you didn't have anything to do with this. I'm depending on you to tell me who did.
All but four.
Well, God better have mercy on the rest of them, or they ain't going to get any from me. Meet you at Judge Tyler's in the morning.
Gentlemen, under the circumstances, I think we'd better return to our homes. Study, Gerald. I wish to be alone.
I want to talk to you first.
I have no desire to discuss anything with you.
No. Because you've got an idea what I want to say. You loved it, didn't you? I saw your face, the face of a depraved and murderous beast. You knew in your heart those men were innocent, but you were cold crazy to see them hang. To make me see it, too. Go ahead. Go into your study. Go and hide behind your door, Major Tetley. That won't do you any good because I know the truth about you now. I'm not the coward in this family. You are. You're the coward. You're the... Killing yourself doesn't change it. You're the coward. You.
What's the matter? Don't anyone want to buy a drink? I ain't running this saloon for my health, you know.
I don't feel like a drink right now.
No, it's a funny thing. And me either.
Would some of you boys like me to tell you why?
Lay off, Davies.
Because I asked you to read a letter and you wouldn't. You wouldn't even listen to it. But you're going to listen to it. You're going to listen to it now. I'm going to read it to you. It says, my dear wife, Mr. Davis will tell you what's happening here tonight. He's done everything he can for me. I suppose there are some other good men here, only they don't seem to realize what they're doing. They're the ones I feel sorry for. They'll have to go on remembering this all their lives. A man just naturally can't take the law into his own hands and hang people without hurting everybody in the world. Because he's not only breaking one law... but all laws. Law is a lot more than words you put on a book, or judges, or lawyers, or sheriffs to hire to carry it out. It's sort of like the conscience of the whole world. And when you hit at that, you hit at everybody, everywhere. There's more, but it's kind of personal.
I don't think he'd want me to read it to you. Besides, I think you've heard enough.
Yeah, I gotta be going anyway.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's getting late.
Let's go.
Come on.
They're gone now. The town looks almost deserted again. A blazing sun, one dusty street, and nothing moving except an old, tired, mongrel dog. It won't be remembered very long. A small thing, not much. You might say, just an incident.
Sweet, low, sweet.
Thank you, Edward Arnold, Harry Davenport, William Ives, and Jess Lee Brooks for a deeply stirring and challenging story. Your appearance here with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players makes possible the work being done by the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its Country House and Clinic. And the entire industry joins us in thanking you for your participation. We'll tell you about next week's show in just a moment, but first, a word from one of America's foremost beauty authorities, Lady Esther.
If you want proof, quick, dramatic proof that Lady Esther four-purpose face cream does something really special and exciting for your skin, don't forget to make my 30-second test. In half a minute, you will know, you will see with your own eyes and feel with your own fingertips how much more Lady Esther face cream does for your skin than any other beauty preparation, no matter how much you may have paid for it. Just apply a little Lady Esther four-purpose face cream to one side of your face, one cheek. Rub it in well, and then wipe it off. Wipe it completely from your skin. Now compare the two sides of your face and see how much more alive and radiant one side looks than the other. Feel it. Feel how much smoother, how baby soft it's become to the touch of your fingertips. I don't ask you to take my word. I ask you to prove what I say. Prove to yourself in 30 seconds how much this one cream does to beautify your skin. I know that once you try Lady Esther four-purpose face cream, you'll say goodbye to elaborate beauty routines. Remember, all you need is this one jar of cream, Lady Esther four-purpose face cream.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present It Happened Tomorrow. It will star Linda Darnell, Frank Craven, and Dick Powell. Be sure to listen. Edward Arnold is one of the stars appearing in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Technicolor production, Kismet. Harry Davenport appeared through the courtesy of W.R. Frank Productions and is currently working in their picture, A Boy, a Girl, and a Dog. William Ives appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox and can now be seen in the Daryl F. Zanuck Technicolor production, Wilson. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Your druggist should have Lady Esther four-purpose face cream. If he hasn't, all he need do is write or wire Lady Esther, Chicago, and he will be supplied. Truman Bradley speaking for Lady Esther, saying thank you and good night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I really hope you liked that adaptation of the Oxbow Incident. I sure did, and I have more Wellman films coming up in the weeks ahead, and I hope you'll join us then. Thanks to my wife for being my wonderful announcer, both on this and on the commentary track. Thanks to my pal Mike Bolt for the zippy theme music. And thanks to James Hutchins for designing my websites, thecommentarytrack.com and frankthompson.tv. Please go to thecommentarytrack.com and click on the Amazon banner and buy books and videos and DVDs and Blu-rays and buy more than that. Buy a large estate. Because whatever you buy on Amazon, if you go through my website on my link, then I'll get a little bit back from Amazon. So the more expensive things you buy, have you ever thought about owning a Pacific island? Like a deserted island, like Lost, that kind of thing? It would cost a lot of money, wouldn't it? But you could buy it, and then I could come out with all my riches from the percentage I would make, and I'd come out and visit you. That would be sweet. So please do that. Also on the website, you can look at my books that can be ordered directly from me. And if they can't be ordered directly from me, you can get them through Amazon too. And I hope that you'll do that. So, we will see you again next week with another radio adaptation of a Wellman film. And in the meantime, try to find the DVD of the Oxbow Incident and watch it. You'll like it.